Hello and welcome, and I mean welcome, to Movie Moan here at ThinkMcFlyThink.com. This is Jamie Williams, writer for the website. I don't want to say I'm the big cheese up here, but you know I am a fat ass, and I certainly have had my fair share of cheese in my life. I kid, of course, but really I am fat. Sitting next to me, not really sitting next to me, but in spirit he is the British gentleman agent, Mr. Phil G. Say hello, Phil.
Hello, everybody. It is a supreme thrill and honor to be doing this in a pre-recorded format. We are no strangers, Jamie and I, to the podcasting format, but this is the first time we've done it pre-recorded. It's very exciting.
Yeah, it is kind of weird because, you know, we did Movie Moan for pretty much a year on another network that will remain.
It was a whole year.
It was a whole year on another network that will remain nameless, now live. And, you know, we had problems with the audio and whatnot. They would never get back with us. And granted, we weren't like, you know, the people who were making them big bucks. I mean, the whole motto of Now Live is that you too can make your own podcast. So Phil thought, you know what, I should do one. And he contacted me for some reason. I don't remember. And we did it. And we had a good time. And we decided to move on, get away from there. Once we decided to start Think McFly Think Up, the first decision was, well, we have to take Movie Moan over here. And one of the sort of downsides was the fact we couldn't do it live anymore as a radio program / podcast. But I guess it's also a good thing because there's some crazy shits who will call you and you can't really control them. And we've had our fair share of those. I mean, if you want to go listen to them, we'll let you go dig into the archives of Now Live to find that. But I digress, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, this is ThinkMcFlyThink.com. I don't really know how to start off, Phil. How have you been? I guess that's the first thing to say.
Well, Jamie, as people who don't live outside the US would know, I'm not really starting off very well. I'm all
tongue-tied.
But basically, it's so frustrating to be living in a country outside the US if you're a movie fan and you want to see all the big movies that are being talked about in Oscar season.
Yes.
Because they only ever get released in the sort of January, February, March slot. And sometimes they all get released on the same week.
Really?
To the point, yes, next Friday, the 23rd of January, I believe, Valkyrie, Frost Nixon, and Milk are all being released on the same day. And because some of them are probably limited releases, so, you know, if you don't see them that first week, you probably won't get to see them until DVD. I don't have the money to see three friggin' films in one weekend, so I'm going to have to be very, very ruthless. To be honest, I wasn't really interested in seeing Milk. I'm going to skip that one. So next Saturday, I'm going to see Valkyrie and Frost Nixon both on the same day. And hopefully I enjoy them and I'll have a great day. But it's infuriating to live in this bloody country where you have to wait until next year to see all these movies that people in America have been talking about since last winter.
Yeah.
And they only get released on the same friggin' weekend. It's frustrating, but, you know.
Well, it's frustrating, but at least, like, that gives you a very active weekend, you know. It's like you can see two potentially great movies. I say potentially because I haven't, you know, I didn't see Milk and I haven't seen Frost Nixon yet. I've seen Valkyrie and I liked it quite a bit, but that's beside the point. I'm not going to review that right now. No point in doing that. It's already made its money in the States. It's done surprisingly well in the United States, I will say. And it'll probably make more in your neck of the woods. I say your neck of the woods as in just Europe, because I imagine this thing will probably make like $100 million in like the European markets, maybe. I could imagine. I mean, you know, it's a good movie. It's a tight little thriller. But anyway.
What I will say is that if that is the extent of my frustration and problems, then I'm living a good life, which I am right now. I can't complain. I've got a job. I have money to go and see the movies.
That's true.
I won't complain. So shall we do it, Jamie? Shall we get on with the news?
We shall get on with the news, good sir. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, or more importantly, depending on who's listening to this, nerds of the internet, your prayers have been answered to whatever god you were praying to, because the Watchmen lawsuit has been settled. That's right.
Hallelujah.
I know. A lot of people were really praying to any kind of god they can get their hands on, you know, that this thing would be settled. And, yeah, 20th Century Fox and Warner Brothers have reached a settlement, the details of which are just now coming out. Apparently Fox is getting some nice money up front, a piece of the back end, and they get paid. They also get, percentage points of any kind of sequels or follow-ups or prequels or whatever the hell is going to happen.
I just had to laugh. A sequel to Watchmen?
Yes.
That's kind of, that just doesn't make sense to me.
Well, I mean, you know, if Psycho can be remade, I think we can argue that Watchmen can get a sequel. I mean, I don't know what'll happen, mind you. You know, maybe Rorschach will come back from the dead. Oops, sorry, give a spoiler away.
Don't give anything away. I haven't read it.
I was joking when I said that, of course.
Okay. Nice save.
Yeah.
Well, you know what, Jimmy? The only thing that I was frightened of, and I wasn't alone, and if people think this was silly and immature of me, then, you know, I apologize. But on the other hand, I think I was justified. The only thing I was worried about was that if Fox managed to get some kind of distribution control on the film, in essentially the ability to take the film and, if they wanted to do so, re-edit it to a more commercial length, which Fox has been notorious for doing. I have a very low opinion of Fox. I think they make, as far as their blockbuster films are concerned, they make films for teenagers. Teenagers, they think, have short attention spans and cannot watch a film that is over 100 minutes long. That's why they chopped Daredevil to pieces. That's where we got an X-Men 3 that was under 100 minutes long, which is ridiculous. That's why we've got Alien versus Predator films that have in no way been at all epic or done justice to that marvelous concept. And we were scared to death, some of us, including me, about what the hell they would do to Watchmen, which we've heard is not a very commercial length at the moment. It's like 2.5 hours. Apparently the final cut of it, if Zack Snyder does get to release that on DVD, will be something like 3 hours, 3.5 hours, something crazy like that. So that's the only thing I was scared of. As long as Fox doesn't have control of the film and the final cut of it as it's released, then I'm great, and I'm going to get my IMAX ticket as soon as it's available.
Well, I mean, you know, this was always about money. I mean, I they had their chance to make the goddamn movie, and they didn't. I mean, to be fair, though, I mean, this is not just a Fox is bad kind of story. I mean, you know, Warner Brothers is to blame on this to a degree, because there have been reports coming out from our friends over at other websites. I think it was our buddy Rob Sanchez, the big cheese over at IESB. I think it was him who said that, look, you know, they contacted – Fox contacted Warner Brothers and said, you know, hey, these rights aren't secured. We better do something about this, and Fox just blew them off. Someone correct me if I'm wrong on that fact. So, you know, it's not so much that just – you know, it's only Fox's fault. And, of course, the guy I would hate to be like now is the producer of The Watchmen, Larry Gordon.
Lawrence Gordon,
yeah. So – you know, he has to basically give up some of his percentage points in order for Warner Brothers to recoup their losses in the settlement. And also, you just can't help but think, like, this could possibly destroy his reputation in Hollywood. Granted, in Hollywood, you know, if you can make someone money, all is forgiven. But you just – I mean, you know, if this movie doesn't make money, which I'm not a big box office expert. I'll be the first to admit that. It could be – bad news for Larry Gordon. I mean, you know, who's going to want to deal with him then? It's like, you know, I've got the rights to this comic book, this other comic book. Oh, well, did you secure the rights? I totally did. And then the executives kind of like shift eyes and just go, oh, okay, sure you do. You know, I mean, just it's pretty bad. It sucks to be him right now.
You've inspired me. I was under the impression that Lawrence Gordon at the moment, or at least in the last decade, has not had the most amazing streak of films he's produced. I'm going to just check that. Yes, let's see what he's been up to. Yes, he was the producer of Waterworld.
Ooh.
Which I liked, but, you know, he was the producer of The Devil's Own, which,
ooh,
you know, do you remember that film?
Brad Pitt with the
IRA guy. Yeah, he's always disowned that. He was the producer on... let's see. He was on producer on Mystery Men, which I liked. I liked Mystery Men very much, but it was a big flop. He was a producer on Tomb Raider and Tomb Raider 2. Enough said. He was a producer on the two Hellboy films, but don't know how much he had to do with those. And he's been a producer on Watchmen. And apparently he's a producer on Meg, the giant shark movie, which supposedly, according to IMDb, will come out now in 2010, but we've been waiting on that for a while. So it's not like he's had the most amazing track record over the last couple of years. I thought he was pretty much... Oh, and he was also a producer on Apex, that Kevin Smith is an Alien movie.
Yes.
Yeah, so there
Kevin,
you are.
Yeah, that's right. Kevin Spacey eats a banana with a peel on. That was the ad campaign, and, you know, it worked, to be fair. You know, people really wanted to see that. So it was... You know,
not me.
Yeah, strangely. So, yeah, we'll see what happens with that. What else is there to say?
Well, anyway, it's coming. It's coming. Watchmen is coming in March. We're all very happy.
Yes, we are very happy. But you know, speaking of speaking of Fox having problems, a report came out Friday morning, actually, or maybe it was Thursday night. The good folks over at Collider got word through their contacts that. That X-Men Origins Wolverine had is going through quite extensive reshoots going on right now in the Vancouver area, and I mean why would it is anybody surprised? I mean, that's my question. It's like, the movie looks terrible. There's been nothing but bad reports coming out of that thing. I think it was John Campy, our friend over at the movie blog, was the one who first reported on it, where he said he was hearing word that, you know, the it's a very troubled production and that nobody was really feeling the material, and, you know, who was the director? Gavin Hood was having it out with Fox over the tone, and but then again, you know, I mean, they hired Gavin.
Wait a second, Jamie, just a second, back up. Are you telling me that Fox, a studio with a marvelous reputation for letting directors have creative control, like 20th Century Fox, was having creative issues with the director they hired on a comic book movie?
I
don't know what kind of possible evidence. You can't just make accusations like that without evidence to back it up.
I am shocked and appalled at that news myself. I didn't believe it at first either, but I had to dig deep to find that news. Apparently this has happened before at Fox. A guy named Brian Singer had problems. Who was the other guy? Alex, I can't pronounce
it. Alex Prios or something on the iRobot.
I've never been able to pronounce his name. The fat guy who made Dark City. And again, this is coming from a fat guy, so it's okay if I call him fat.
And let's not forget the recent car wreck, Babylon AD.
Babylon AD is one that came to mind, and many other future disasters, I'm sure. But apparently they were saying that they're going to try to get online journalists – the net press, if you will, on the set in the coming weeks. And I don't know if that's something you want to do. I mean, wouldn't the first question be like, so you're reshooting 4 months before the movie comes out. That's a good sign, huh, guys? And I wouldn't be wanting to parade that out loud in front of people, but apparently they are. I mean, what can I say? I don't really have much faith in the Wolverine movie. I mean, I didn't hate X-Men 3. I mean, I didn't think it was particularly good. It was certainly watchable, but it was very rushed, you know, watching it, you can just tell, like, they basically were filming off the seat of their pants, which they were. What can I say? The Wolverine looks terrible. I'm not really looking forward to it. I think it's going to either underperform or bomb. But again, as I said earlier, I'm not a box office expert. Other people can attest to that. So maybe it will make money, but I'm not feeling this flick.
Well, here's my basic problem that I've had with this film from the start. It's that I just don't see how the hell it is going to work and successfully mesh into X-Men 1. It is a prequel.
Yes.
For all intents and purposes. And I've heard Hugh Jackman say, if this film works, you should be able to watch it and then go straight into X-Men 1 and it will seamlessly mesh.
He
said that. So let's, let's ignore the fact that a completely different person, not just a completely different actor, but a completely different looking person is playing Sabretooth, who is in X-Men number one. I can understand why they wanted to get an actor and then a name actor instead of a wrestler who isn't really an
Tyler
actor.
Bang.
I can understand that. That's right. Who some people didn't like in X-Men 1, but to be honest, he was given he was the Jaws of that movie. He wasn't actually given a character. But let's ignore all that for a second. The whole point of X-Men 1 and 2 and the way Bryan Singer dealt with Wolverine's origin and the way he brilliantly managed it was Wolverine was the character that we, the audience, followed through those movies, those two movies. He was our introduction to the world and our introduction to his backstory was told in flashbacks that he received at the same time as us. You know, we were following him on the journey. He had amnesia. You know, right. When he remembered something, that was the first time we found out about his origin. It was told in broad strokes, so we didn't get the whole picture. So we got basically the idea, but we were left enough blanks that, you know, the comic book fans were happy that, that his origin hadn't been completely blown, because the whole point of Wolverine is he's supposed to be a character with, you know, a sense of mystery and mystique, and you don't know the whole story. And that worked. And at the end of X-Men 2, you know, he throws away his tags and he says, or he carries away the child and he says, I don't care. Essentially, I don't care who I was. I'm me now, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, in X-Men 3, we don't even worry about that whatsoever. There's not a line die where Homer goes, hey, weren't you trying to wonder who you were? And he's just like, no, I'm in love with Jean Grey now. I'm sad.
Exactly.
Now I need to go fight somebody. You know.
Exactly. So, you know, that was great, and that's why Wolverine worked in X-Men 1 and 2. I don't see how you can do X-Men Origins : Wolverine, terrible title. Who's going to call it that when they get their ticket at the box office? Who's going to call it that?
The theater stub will probably, the little ticket stub you'll get, it will say Wolverine probably, or Wolf. You know, they'll probably cut off the arene part at the very end. I don't know. I did get it. I mean, you know, I was wrong. I mean, on our previous show, on the other network, I had said that the Quantum of Solace, you know, your ticket stub would say Quas instead of Quantum of Solace.
Yes, that's exactly what mine said.
I was wrong. No, mine said Quantum. So I was wrong. You know, I got the first of those three words. You know, I didn't just get an abbreviation of that. But, you know.
Yeah, but basically what I mean is that I don't understand how you can do a prequel story for Wolverine and have it be the prequel to X-Men 1 and 2 without completely undermining the first two movies, because there's going to be probably so many continuity issues. Do you remember, Jamie, there's that fantastic flashback image in X-Men 2 where he's running out of the cave all naked and covered in blood, and he's seeing his claws out pop for the first time, and he just yells out and screams. They're not going to do that in this movie. They're going to be so scared of having a guy covered in blood, you know, running around, because they want that PG-13 rating. There's no way they're going to do that. I just don't see how it's going to work. Having said that, I know a lot of people hated the trailer. I think you hated it, didn't you, Jamie?
I did.
I liked the trailer. I thought it had some good action scenes. I think if they're going to bring in Gambit, it seems like it's not just going to be a cameo. They're actually going to give him something to do. I'm not, you know, hung up on the fact that Deadpool doesn't have his mask or whatever. I'm not one of those guys. It doesn't bother me.
Yeah, I don't care. I'm not a fan of the character. So, I mean, what can I say?
So I liked the trailer. I thought it had some good action. But I have said, and you'll back me up on this, back me up on this, Jamie. I've said this. If the reviews are bad, I'm not going to go see it. I've been burned by Fantastic Four movies. I'm just not going to do it. I've got better things to do.
Now, when does it come out in the UK?
The first week of May.
Oh,
it's
so
a worldwide release.
Oh, it's a day and date release. Okay, well, that's... Wow, that's... It is? Oh, that's interesting. It opens this summer. It opens up this summer film season. I just wonder if Star Trek will kick its ass. And, of course, those are famous last words, me saying that. But I still think Star Trek is going to surprise the shit out of a lot of people. And, you know, I could be wrong, but Paramount's pushing the hell out of that movie, which, again, could be interpreted as a good thing or a bad thing, you know, because – sometimes people push a movie really hard because they know they're only going out really for the opening weekend. So we'll see what happens on that one.
I think we can safely say Wolverine is going to have a big opening weekend, 50-plus million.
Yes.
Simply because of Hugh Jackman. Because we all love Hugh. Even if he's been in Van Helsing, we still love Hugh.
Yeah.
He's got that kind of credibility.
He is going to push this movie harder than he's ever pushed any of the other movies, though, because this is 100% on his...
You mentioned that. Wait, what's Hugh Jackman done this past weekend to try and help the movement?
He sent a picture out to Ain't It Cool News, I believe. He sent a report to Harry Knowles over there with a new picture of him and I think it's like Gambit and Sabretooth and Deadpool and other characters, and they all look down at the ground except for Wolverine, who's sternly looking into the camera that's taking the snapshot. Whatever.
It's like they're all looking at his package or his ass or something. It looks very...
They were ashamed. If the movie's called Deadpool, then we'll see, you know, Ryan Reynolds look up into the look up at the picture. But it's not. It's called Wolverine, goddammit. So anyway.
Yeah, we'll see. Like I say, if it's bad, I'm staying away. I don't need to see it.
Well, I mean, with this day and age, with the economy, which will get better, ladies and germs, we'll get through this. Just getting off topic for 3 seconds right there, or probably 10 actually. But, you know, people are going to be very particular about what they want to spend their money on probably. So, you know, yeah, that might actually play a factor in it, Phil. We'll see. But anyway, next item is, you know, more out of Mr. McGee. His Terminator Salvation comes out in the very end of May, a Memorial Day weekend here in the States. I don't know when you get it. I'm assuming you're getting it around the June or July area.
Probably.
Yeah.
Not really.
So they're going doing a roadshow event right now, showing new footage from the film and, you know, taking interviews from the press and whatnot, and I don't know who it was that got a hold of him, so I can't give proper credit where it's due, so I apologize, but McGee revealed that they are currently trying to get Linda Hamilton to do a opening voiceover narration for the film to kind of bridge, I guess, between the events of Terminator 3 to the beginning of this fourth film, which is the beginning of a potential trilogy. I'm fine with that. I mean, I don't.
That's confusing.
How so?
Well, it can't really bridge between Terminator 3 and 4 because she died off screen before Terminator 3. She got cancer or something, didn't she?
Maybe she's like recording this from, you know, from beyond, you know.
Okay, then.
I don't know. I mean, it would make more sense if you had, you know, Bale do it, but then again, or it could be worse. You know, you could have had Arnold do it. I mean, why not have him do it?
Why not?
No, actually, it's a terrible idea. I'm okay with Linda Hamilton doing it. You know, I will say about McGee, I mean, the man knows how to sell his product. You know, he's like a great car salesman. You know, he'll sell you a lemon, and you won't realize it till you've just driven off the dealership, probably. And, you know, he's selling the hell out of this movie, and so is Warner Brothers. And the reception has been so far that Terminator Salvation is going to really be something worthwhile. I hope it is. I mean, it's certainly, you know, when they first announced it, everyone just kind of groaned like, oh, fourth one, McGee. But then, you know, starting with the announcement that Christian Bale had been cast as John Connor, everything started to turn around, and then we saw pictures and we saw the trailer in front of The Dark Knight, which pretty much everyone fucking saw since The Dark Knight made so much goddamn money. And, you know, the second trailer that got even better response. So, and there's going to be a Super Bowl ad, I think. I don't, correct me on that one. So I think this film's going to do really well.
Do you know what I'd like to see that would be really cool? We probably won't get this because it's too far in the past, but it would be nice to see a little tribute to Stan Winston in the credits. Would just be nice because so much of the work in this is inspired by his work.
Well, he did the movie.
Oh, did he?
Yes.
I didn't know.
I think it's like that and Avatar is his last movies, I think.
Right.
Again, correct me, folks, on this. You can come on the comments section and scream bullshit on me. Won't be the first time that's ever been done to me, nor will it be the last. Yeah, I believe he worked on some of the designs and stuff. So,
to be honest, I'm not really excited about Terminator 4. I'm going to see it because I did think there should be a Terminator 4, not necessarily a whole other trilogy,
right.
But we'll see what happens to this one. This is one I am going to see, unless the reviews are horrible in a car crash kind of way bad, but I don't think there will be. I think this should be all right, you know. But the only thing that's really getting me excited is the prospect that we'll see a whole slew of different kinds of robots, which
yes.
I think we're going to see. That's really the only thing that's exciting me. And to be honest, you can't really blame Warner, not that you should blame them, but you can't blame Warner Brothers for promoting the hell out of this movie when, apart from Harry Potter, it's all they've got this summer. Oh,
yeah.
And Watchmen, of course. But then, you know, they're taking a bit of a bite, you know.
Well, I mean, they've got
Fox is taking a bite.
Yeah, I think they've got like the Robert Rodriguez has got a fantasy family adventure film called Shorts. So I think it's finished already, or it's getting near completion. They've already shot it and stuff, and I think that's going to be an August release. So that's three films in them. There might be a few others, but what else do they have this year? I mean, that's summer, but like they've got Sherlock Holmes that comes out this fall that might do well, it might not. I don't know. I can't really judge it off of like a couple of pictures of Robert Downey Jr. wearing a hat.
No.
I hope it's good, but I'm not a big Guy Ritchie fan. So hopefully this will be, you know, what I'm hoping this will be kind of like a scenario not unlike Nolan, where it's like it's the right commercial property that gels well with the filmmaker, you know? Because, like, mm-hmm. Batman was perfect for Nolan, and he made it his own and just, you know, made something really great out of it. So I'm hoping that'll – and it might be the same way with McGee with Terminator and possibly Abrams with Star Trek and so on and so forth. We'll see. I know I say we'll see a lot, and I'm going to try to knock that off for the rest of this podcast and future podcasts in general. I'm sure people will complain about that as well. But, you know, I'm curious to see a trailer for Sherlock Holmes. I can only assume that we'll see a trailer in front of Terminator, if not Terminator.
It's the time for us to, you know, to click with it. If, you know, I often think whether Batman Begins had been the first Batman movie back in 1989, yeah. you know, would have been successful. Yeah. Probably because people just wouldn't have been able to deal with it.
No, I don't think it wouldn't have done it wouldn't have done well because it would have been 10 years after Superman, and they took a very – and Nolan has admitted this. He said, like, you know, the movie that – one of the films that was playing in my – I was thinking about while I was making Batman Begins was Superman, and the idea that it's this big epic movie, the you know, the origins, the beginning of this legendary hero, and, you know, how he – you know, and had all these – this huge cast of big-name actors – in the cast wrapped around this lesser-known actor. Although, to be fair, I mean, Christopher Reeve was a flat-out unknown. Bale was already a very established character actor, but the general public really didn't know him, you know, really. I know some people want to say, oh, they knew him, but they really didn't. I mean, American Psycho was a great movie, but and it did get headlines, but, you know, it didn't really make much money.
And there's this, this Sam Worthington guy,
yes.
who I really don't know, but he's suddenly wow. he's in appearing in everything, or he's going to in the next couple of years, and, you know,
people
we'll
are
see.
This, man, if this guy does not become the next big thing, you know, it's I'd hate to be him if that doesn't happen, because this guy's being touted as being, like, you know, the next big movie star.
Christian Bale.
Yeah, or Christian Bale, I mean, or Russell Crowe is one I was thinking of, but yeah, Bale, you know, but... I mean, he's got Terminator Salvation, The Future Begins, which I think they've cut that out of the title now, thank God.
Again, another title which I will not be saying when I collect my ticket. I'm just going to say Terminator
That's
or Terminator 4.
Terminator.
Much.
That's what they'll say. You know, how many tickets for Terminator? And he's got Avatar, which is the biggest question mark of any film this year. No question about that one, folks. And then what's the other one? He's got Clash of the Titans, but that's in 2010, and that might not even happen. I mean, that's one I just go. I mean, you know, just because someone announces a movie doesn't mean it's going to happen. I mean, so considering the fact that it's supposed to be a green screen movie for the most part, I could see them pulling it off. But we'll, you know, that has to face off against a movie called. There's another movie about gods. I don't remember what it's called, but it's starring Henry Cavill that Sony is making. I forget what it's called. I feel bad for forgetting it right now. You know which one I'm talking about? Yeah, don't even look it up. Just like, no, forget it.
No.
Move on.
Well,
move on to something else.
2010, I'm sure we'll remember when the time comes.
Yeah, but they're both very similar in the fact that, you know, they deal with the gods and stuff. And it sounds like one of those things where if one movie moves forward, the other won't happen. I can't imagine both movies getting made, if that makes any sense. Because we haven't had that.
Kind of, but we've seen that happen before. Yeah, we've seen.
Last time we saw that happen, though.
Like,
you know, they were supposed
to think of
yeah, that's the thing, that we were supposed to see, like, two Alexander the Great movies. Scorsese had one that he was producing that, who was it? Baz Luhrmann was going to direct it. DiCaprio was going to star in it. And that was the one that sounded great. That was the one I wanted to see. And then Oliver Stone had one with Colin Farrell.
Can we please change the subject very quickly? I do not want to get depressed tonight thinking about that fucking movie.
Yeah, well, I still haven't seen it. I mean, it's, you know. No. If it looks like a turd, it smells like a turd, guess what, folks? It's a turd. So, yeah.
Life is precious, Jamie.
Yeah, okay, we'll move on. But you guys get the idea I'm trying to say. So let's see, what other news items came on? I've got two more marked, and we'll see if we can remember any off the top of our heads. Some Iron Man 2 casting news has been going on the last 2 weeks, week and a half somewhat. Let's see, Mickey Rourke, who is pretty much like the comeback king of Hollywood right now, is playing one of the villains who might be the Crimson Dynamo. I'm not really aware of the Iron Man Rogues Gallery, so someone, you know, will have to tell me if I'm wrong on that one. Sam Rockwell will play a character, and Emily Blunt will play a character, the Black Widow, I think her name is, who was a Soviet agent. You know, meh.
As I understand it, as you can imagine from the name, the Crimson Dynamo is another guy in a robotic suit, but a Russian guy.
But a Russian guy.
A badass, evil guy who isn't the head of a big corporation. He's not an executive,
basically. Yes, but, and that's basically the Sam Rockwell role. He's playing Justin Chambers, who
Justin
I know from
Hammer.
The comic.
Who I understood was Justin Hammer. He was an old guy.
He was, but I'm fine with them changing that. You know, that's not really a big deal. Sure, the Justin Hammer fan club is like screaming in horror right now at that change, but I'm sure Favreau doesn't care. It's casting calls like this that really make you, very confident that we're going to get a good Iron Man movie, a good sequel to Iron Man, which it's cool. I mean, I haven't actually seen the movie since the opening weekend, to be honest. I really liked it.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, they had the thirsty 8 p.m. screenings for people, so I took some friends and we saw it, and I enjoyed it a lot, and that was it. I didn't really see it again. I don't really like to rewatch movies as much as I used to. It's not really a big thing for me. You know, I generally, if there's anything I watch on DVD, it's like TV shows. I'm big on that.
You know, I've got to tell you, Jamie, that movie has got universal appeal. I have spoken to so many people of different age groups, family, friends, acquaintances, and people in the office who've rented that movie or bought that movie, you know, bought it for their children, but watched it themselves and really, really liked it. And I think, you know, the audience for this sequel is just through the roof right now. And there's two things about this news which get me really excited. Number one, I loved, you know, I think we all loved Ironmonger. We all loved seeing two guys in robotic body armor, especially two amazing actors.
Yes.
Like Jeff Bridges and Robert Downey Jr. fight each other in Robert Downey Jr. It just appeals to the little kids in us. It's so, so funny. And we loved it. The only problem, of course, with Ironmonger is he was only on screen for 7 minutes or something at the end. So the great thing about having Mickey Rourke as the Crimson Dynamo is I would assume it means we will get a villain in a robotic bodysuit a lot quicker into the movie than just at the very end. We'll have him fighting Iron Man like 2 or 3 times, which would be
nice.
Awesome.
Well, there's also, and of course, there's also the prospect that Sam Jackson might not even be in Iron Man 2, despite,
is going on?
I you kind of wonder what's going on over at the mindset of Marvel right now. It's like they really have this idea that they just, have their shit doesn't stink and they've got the biggest dicks in the room. I don't know. I mean, then again, I don't know what Sam Jackson demanded in his agent. So, I mean, it's a two-way street here. But, I mean, the fact that they had issues with – who was it? They had issues with Ed Norton. Now, apparently Ed Norton won't even be anywhere near any Iron Man – or any Hulk sequel, supposedly. And then there was, of course, the – Terrence Howard situation where they basically just fired him and threw him out the door, said see you later, and then replaced him with Don Cheadle, who, Don Cheadle's a great actor, but it's nice to have continuity between movies. And now this,
Well, that's the thing. That's exactly the thing, Jamie. They're the ones who are telling us about how we're about to see the birth of the cinematic Marvel Universe. All these movies intertwined, and yet we can't keep continuity between the actors between one movie to the next. It's nuts.
Maybe this is I don't know.
All I'll say is that the other thing which makes me excited about Iron Man 2 is if you hear that we've got the Crimson Dynamo, Justin Hammer, and the Black Widow, then that gives you a pretty much basic idea of how Iron Man 2 is going to play, even if they throw in the alcoholism. And I hope they do at this point. I think that's the right way to go. I don't know either, and I think they could do a good movie without her. I'm not saying it has to be there, but I think it's the right way to go. There's a right way to do it without being preachy. But basically, if they've got those new characters in the movie, you get a basic idea of where it's going, and it's an exciting direction. And I guess the Mandarin's not going to be until part 3 or the Avengers movie, but that's fine with me. There's plenty of other villains to hold us
over. Well, see, that's another one that I go, the Avengers, where, you're basically pushing this movie on a July 2011 release. Again, I'm not
a chance.
I don't think it's going to happen. I think they're going to push it back here. I really do. I could be wrong on this, and it's 100% a hunch on my part. I mean, we do have some contacts at TMT, or Think McFly Think, but this is not one of them. This is just a hunch on old Jamie's part, but I think they're going to push it back because they're basically depending – they're assuming that whoever they cast as Captain America is going to be spot on and it's going to work. Whoever they cast as Thor is going to be spot on to work, and Downey, and whoever they get to – assuming they get the Hulk back, and then whoever's going to play Wasp or the other characters – the fact that you're going to put that out only like 2 months after Captain America or the first Avenger, Captain America, terrible title, by the way, I just don't see that happening. That's very – I don't think it's realistic.
You've got to find the writer who's going to be able to manage to pull off this incredibly hard job of giving everybody screen time. You've got to give sufficient screen time to warrant hiring these actors, these big-name actors who command big paychecks. And you've got to find the director who's going to be willing to take all this on. Yeah, like you said, the plan is that to have a Captain America, sorry, correct me, the first Avenger, colon, Captain America, as exactly. They're calling it right now.
Terrible title.
Wonderful title.
It is.
What America's love affair with the colon, it just drives me up the wall. They have abolished the number two for movie titles, and I'll never understand. And if they do use the number two, use it in some fucked up fashion like AVP.
I like the Roman numeral. I'm old school with my sequel.
Exactly,
I like Roman
me too.
Numeral two, you know, like Rocky two. Not
exactly.
None of this, you know, I mean.
Yes.
I mean, they couldn't even call the third X-Men X-Men 3. They had to call it X-Men : The Last Stand. Which, I mean, what are they standing
for? I know.
I mean, you know, what do you mean?
I don't mind the abbreviation. I don't mind X2, X3, X4. That's fine. That rolls off the tongue. Because there's a number in it. You know where it sits.
There you go.
Oh, God. Yeah, I know. That's another thing. X-Men 2 wasn't called X-Men 2 technically. According to Fox, it was called X2: X-Men United.
But see, that didn't bother
me. It sounds like a football team to us.
That didn't bug me, though, for some reason.
It did bug me. It was terrible.
You went to the ticket, you know, holder, and you're just like, which movie? Let's see, X-Men 2. Like, well, we have an X2. No, God damn it, want to see X2.
I know.
Or X-Men.
It's just friggin' ridiculous. But, you know, like I say, yeah, they're planning to have Captain America released a month apart from the Avengers movie. I would imagine how it would play. And I'm excited that they'll have a Captain America movie that's set entirely in World War II, and that he gets frozen at the end of it, and then he gets found by the Avengers and the Avengers in the Avengers movie.
I don't think they'll have him frozen at the end. They'll have like a, you know, that'll probably be like a three-act story, and that'll have a clear conclusion that doesn't do the to-be-continued ... thing. I don't think they'll do that with Captain America. I could be wrong. But I'm not worried about Captain America or Thor. I mean, although, again, Thor's one that I could kind of see be delayed, but at the way things are going right now, like, yeah, they'll probably make it for – I think that's going to be a July 2010 release on that one.
By the way, just to check, are we still recording?
Yes.
Because I don't know. We are. Okay, good. I was just checking. I have no way of knowing. Okay.
We're not used to this, folks. This is a new process for us to pre-record it.
Yes.
So, you know, bear with us. I mean, there's not like going to be an opening song or anything. All the other podcasts I listen to, which are great, like I love the Slash Film Cast. I love Kevin Smith's Smod Cast. Those are great. Those are great. I listen to those all the time. But they have opening songs. We don't have one yet. We'll find one. This is very low grade right now. The whole process is about baby steps. If you ever start a website or a podcast thinking you're going to immediately dominate the internet, you're an idiot. You know, you have to take time. You have to have your head screwed on tight enough to know better. That's my opinion, at least, and surely enough people will agree with me on that.
But I think, and I hope you agree with me on this, Jamie, and we are fully aware at Think McFly Think that there are so many movie sites out there, whether they be review sites or blog sites, whatever, punditry sites, that you have to bring something special, something different to the table in order to stand out, not just be another site.
Right.
And so, you know, hopefully in the next couple of weeks and months, you know, we will be bringing something different to the table.
Absolutely.
I know I'm working on some stuff, which, you know, Jamie knows about, but I'm not going to divulge to you good folks yet. But I love the way the site looks. I think it's very easy on the eyes. It's very easy to read. I'm very happy to be a part of it.
We're happy to have you, buddy. But let's see. One other – the last news item of the day that I can think of the week, and I tell you, man, in all honesty, this is film news I'm legitimately excited about. Like, I don't give a damn about sequels and prequels and reboots and remakes and comic book, graphic novel, TV show properties being made to the big screen. Whatever. I don't care about that shit. This is shit to get excited about.
Rant away, Jamie. I want to bask in your excitement.
You're curious to be what I'm talking about here because I didn't give it away. Apparently, Terry Gilliam is getting back on The Man Who Killed Don Quixote. I'm excited about that, man. For you folks that don't know, it was 9 years ago. Back in 2000, Terry Gilliam started work on The Man Who Killed Don Quixote, which was this project he'd always wanted to make. He had the idea in his head for years. I think he actually wanted to do an adaptation of the book Don Quixote. He couldn't get that specifically, so he said, I'm going to do my own version of Don Quixote. And so he did The Man Who Killed Don Quixote, which was about an ad executive played by Johnny Depp, who is somehow – there's a ripple in time, and he ends up being thrown in the past, and he ends up befriending – the crazy knight and becoming his apprentice, and they made it pretty much through independent money, and they got things started, cast people and were building sets and or not really they I don't think they got that far yet, but they were starting production, and basically everything that could go wrong making a movie went wrong, and they only got about a week's worth of filming, and they basically had to shut down the entire production. And the worst part was the fact that a documentary film crew was there the entire time to do a documentary making on the film's production, basically, for the inevitable Laserdisc or DVD, since this was 2000. So they got a vast of riches because they got a great documentary about Terry Gilliam trying to make this project and it going to hell.
And it is a great documentary.
Lost in La Mancha, which you should check out. If you are ever – and I mean this, if there's anything to take away, if you are seriously wanting to go into the film industry as a film director or producer, you have to watch this documentary because this is – I mean there are moments where you feel just horrible for Gilliam and the guys –
It should be taught in film school and media classes in my opinion. It really should.
Sure, and I hope it is. I mean it's been a while since I've been in film school and we didn't watch it then, so I hope it has been, but man, it's a great piece of film. It's a great documentary. But Gilliam was talking to Empire magazine, the world's best movie magazine, by the way, and they say it on the cover of the magazine every issue, so I can't lie, it says that that he is getting back on the movie. They finally got the rights to the script back, and they're writing it right now, him and his writing partner on that project. And presumably Johnny Depp is still going to star because he's been asked over the years, like, well, are you still going to do it? And he's always said, yes, I'm – if we ever get the project back up, I will definitely star in it again. And since Depp is so huge right now, everyone loves him, particularly Disney apparently, since he signed up for 15 movies of theirs coming out in the next 3 years, presumably he's still going to star in it. I hope he is. That would help it get that would help them get the money to make it. And you know what? If that doesn't happen, then we can just hire Robert Downey Jr. Let him play the lead, because right now people want to back Robert Downey Jr. in anything, hence why Sherlock Holmes is getting made. So maybe old Downey will do it if something happens to Johnny Depp. That's just me thinking out loud. Just an idea.
I think all I know is that this will be the final proof whether there really is a curse on that film. Oh. It's one of the things that goes through line of the documentary, because they say how I think it was Orson Welles tried to make a version of it way, way back. Mind you, there was a whole bunch of films that Orson Welles tried to get made and
Art of Darkness comes
for whatever reasons. Yes. So, this will be the final proof if there is a curse on the film or he actually can get it made. I admire the guy's balls for having another go at it and having another step into hell. And we'll just see if he's actually, got the foresight, thanks to what happened to him, to, avoid the obstacles this time.
But the thing is, though, he seems to be the interviews we've seen with him recently, he seems to really be in this real creative high right now, coming off of The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus. I can't even pronounce the last term. You know which
God
one?
God bless you for trying. I can't even try
It's actually, we were doing a list about our most anticipated films of 2009, and that was my number 2 pick or number 3 pick, actually.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, it was that at number 3, Avatar at number 2.
My number 1 pick is G.I. Joe. I'm just kidding.
Well, I mean, that's, what is it for real, good sir?
I've told you before, Pixar's Up.
There you go. Good pick. That's
one.
My top 10. Actually, mine is Inglourious Basterds. I'm really looking forward to that.
Really?
Yeah,
we'll talk more about that when we hear some some news.
Well, we've heard, you know, seen pictures and shit. I mean, we'll probably
get when we get a trailer or something.
Trailer. Which, I mean, the movies, you know, they're saying, like, come hell or high water, this thing's premiering at Cannes. And Tarantino's had a reputation that when he's committed to a project, he's committed. And I don't mean in a crazy sense. I mean he's going to, you know, really get it made and very fast. That Death Proof was made insanely fast. Granted, I hated Death Proof, but still, that's beside the point. The Brad Pitt being in the cast, and I've got the script actually on my hard drive since it leaked on the internet, and I still haven't gotten around to reading it, and part of me doesn't want to, just to, you know, give away the surprises of the movie, but everyone who's read it, for the most part, has said it's great.
Well, there we are.
Yeah, so.
I'm staying spoiler-free on that one. All I'll say about Terry Gilliam is I've always admired the fact that the guy clearly isn't motivated by money because none of his films make any.
No.
And he still keeps making films.
Well, also the fact that, you know, he's not got a – I mean, when was the last time this guy got a studio gig, like a legitimate big-budget production? I mean, I don't know if – I mean, I guess you could
Brothers
say –
Brothers Grimm?
Yeah, I was going to say maybe Brothers Grimm, but, I mean, that was Miramax, and were they – are they categorized studio?
Apparently that didn't go very well.
Of course, I remember the story about, you know, it's – I'm doing the paraphrase version. This is based on what I've heard, but like he was J.K. Rowling's like first choice to direct Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone or Sorcerer's Stone in the U.S. And they were trying to they were meeting with all these directors, the Warner Brothers execs and whatnot. So they met with Gilliam, and Gilliam knew the whole time. He's like, they're not going to hire me. I know they're not going to hire me, but they flew him down anyway. And he starts reading the script, and he really gets himself built up, like, you know what, this is good, I might actually direct this. And he gets there, and they basically say, look, we're not hiring you, we basically agreed to meet with you so we could please Rowling and say, yeah, we met with him, that's the only reason you're here, because we really don't want you to direct this movie. And that was basically what happened. He said that at a Q&A, I remember, correct me if I'm wrong on that, but it was very funny. And it's like, man, that's just sad, because Gilliam,
you can understand it though, can't you?
Oh, God, yes. God, yes. But, I mean, you know, I could have seen him do an Arena movie. I mean, there are a couple of franchises that probably could have used his magical hands behind the camera. God forbid if something were to happen to Guillermo del Toro in The Hobbit, I mean, I wouldn't have objected to Gilliam directing that movie.
No.
That would have been an interesting choice.
That would have been interesting. Yeah.
That wouldn't have happened because, you know, people don't, you know.
How about Terry Gilliam's Doctor Strange?
See, that would be a great – there you go. That's a good one, man. You know, but again, like, it seems to be this thing with some of these movies is like the studio execs want a yes man. They want someone who is – you know, they've got talent and they gel well with the material and whatever actor they've already attached to the project. But at the end of the day, it's someone who will do what they tell them to do. You know, like,
not necessarily. It's just got to be somebody. To be honest, they will hire someone who's got – you know, who will do whatever the hell they want as long as they – bring the goods, as long as they bring in money, they'll stand over a budget and say, yes, do whatever you want.
I just think of Joe Johnston on Captain America. I mean, it's not, again, I think, I really dug The Rocketeer, and I didn't object to them choosing him for Captain America, but it kind of showed like they're basically getting someone who they can tell what to do, you know, because they could have probably gone to some bigger name director, and there might have been some, like, I mean, Michael Bay. I mean, everyone says Michael Bay for everything. You know, if it's like, if it's patriotic and full of action, everyone says Michael Bay. So everyone says, who should do the next Superman movie? Michael Bay. Who should do Captain America? Michael Bay. I could have seen Bay do a Cap movie. That would have been interesting. But he would have been, I don't think he would have gotten along with Marvel. And again, I don't know the man. I've never met him. But I could imagine that would be something to behold, like the heads of, you know, Marvel Studios butting with Michael Bay, of all people. But he's got Transformers, you know.
Yeah, think about Alfonso Cuarón on the Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban. Does that look like a film where he was getting studio notes? I doubt it. I bet he did get some notes, but he probably ignored all of them.
I will say, yeah, but that seems to be the exception to the rule, because I've always gotten the impression with the Harry Potter films is that they're smart enough to realize we're not going to mess with a good thing, you know. Like the first two movies, everyone lets the shit on Chris Columbus, but it's like, well, he cast those kids, so clearly he knew what he was doing, and he developed the look and the style with the first two movies, but, you know, it was Cuarón that came in and didn't have to worry about establishing all that shit, and he got to really tell a story. So, you know, it kind of bugs me people don't give Columbus his due with those movies. Because yeah, they're great. They're great family movies. They're great kids movies, the first two, actually. You know, they got darker with starting with the third one, but, you know, he did
I still unabashedly love the first one. Second one's a little long. Second one is a little long and a little pedestrian in the direction, but the first one I unabashedly love.
That's another franchise that I basically don't watch it beyond the theater experience. I mean, I personally am of the opinion that each movie gets progressively better than the last. Again, that's a minority view on that series. But, you know, I enjoyed seeing them on the opening nights. I went to the midnight screening of which one? Goblet of Fire, and it was packed, and it was a great experience, and everyone seemed to enjoy it. I love the fact that it ended on such a dark note. I haven't seen it since. Same thing with the more recent one, Prisoner of Azkaban. What was the last one that just came out?
Order of the Phoenix.
Thank you, Order of the Phoenix. I enjoyed the hell out of that one too, and yet again, it just gets darker and darker, and I enjoy that. I mean, I'm not a dark kind of guy, but you know.
Yeah.
But you know, I don't know. I mean, this whole thing about like them moving, you know, the half-blooded print, the idea that they're actually moving that to summer. I mean, it really pissed a lot of people off. You know, we saw that a mile coming. We knew they were moving it anyway.
Saw it a mile coming. I didn't.
I knew about that because I flat out said they're moving it, you know, under the guise of a speculation piece, but we had been told otherwise. But that's beside the point. But, you know, it's not a big deal that they moved it. I don't think it was. I didn't care.
It might turn out to be the best thing for it. You know, now I come back and think about it, I think, you know, they crank these things out so fast, like in year and a half spats now, but there's such a thing about timing, about a film in a franchise being away for a certain amount of time so that the anticipation builds up,
right,
and then you're ready for it and you don't get diminishing returns in a diminished opening weekend. So it might turn out to be the best thing for it. On the other hand, all these people that say they were going to boycott it might actually do it. Fully get into that right now, but it might happen. You never know.
You bring up a good point about that. Like, you have to have enough time for the audience to breathe and enjoy other stuff. That's why, you know, if Batman 3 ends up coming out in 2012 instead of 2011, I won't object. I mean, we're getting another one anyway. I don't really, you know, everyone's like, oh, will Nolan do it? It's like, of course Nolan's going to do another one. I don't really doubt that. I know they're trying
and
to
what
play.
What everybody was talking about this Christmas was Twilight anyway, so there really wasn't room for both of them.
Well, I mean, to be fair though, Twilight really, I mean, that was I think a lot of that was because Harry Potter got out. I mean, I kind of wonder, like, how would Twilight have done had Harry Potter come out as scheduled? I mean, Bond would have probably made less money worldwide, quite frankly. I don't know, maybe it wouldn't have. I mean, you know, Quantum of Solace did very well. It did below what I thought it would do, to be fair. I thought it was going to do like $650, $700 million, and it's doing about, what, $550, which is a lot of money, which is – it's great. But, you know, considering how much they spent on it, the second one, you know. I mean,
It would have hit those numbers you thought it would if it was as good as Casino Royale or better, but it wasn't, unfortunately.
I think it was really good nonetheless. That's just my opinion.
I enjoyed it too. So much better.
I just really don't – I really hope they don't do this whole – I mean every – they'll do like, you know, one movie and they say like, yeah, we're going to go back to basic, man. We're going to get back to Fleming. And then they do one movie and then they'll do another film and immediately change all that the very next movie. And at the most they'll do two. Like they did – the Dalton Reign was supposed to be back to Fleming and they did two of them. And, you know, had License to Kill done better, I mean, you know, we probably would have gotten another one quicker that would have – a third film that would have been darker. But the problem is License to Kill underperformed, so the third Dalton movie was going to be a return to the more sci-fi oriented – epic. I mean, the report's out there. I mean, you guys can look it up. I think it's at Commander Bond, that great website, about Dalton's third film that never got made that was supposed to come out Christmas 91, I think, that was going to involve, like, female robot assassins and, you know, computer viruses. And, again, just really basically doing a then-modern version of You Only Live Twice or Goldfinger or something. Going back to the escapist fantasy because the last movie just, you know, didn't do as well as expected. So you kind of wonder. Are they going to go back to the formula with this third one? I mean, and I say the third one meaning the third one. Everyone calls it Bond 23, but it's like, well, it's a reboot though. It's supposed to be a new series, so it's Bond 3. That's the way I see it, at least. And I don't know.
Well,
I mean,
you and I have had many a passionate discussion about whether, you know, they should bring back in Moneypenny and Q. I don't know if you read that Daniel Craig, he feels the same way I do. He's quite happy for Moneypenny and Q to come back.
Well, Craig also, I disregard what Craig says, and I say that with all.
I know he's not in charge, but I want to see the story of how Bond met Moneypenny. That's all I'm saying.
I say that with respect when I say I disregard Craig. And what I mean by that is there have been other reports where he said, yeah, Quantum of Solace is going to be really goofy like Octopussy, and everyone freaked out, and he was kidding. And then I think he has said like he wanted to have a full-on nude scene, and he wanted to like have like male sex in a Bond movie, and like everyone went crazy, and it turned out he was probably just fucking around with him. So you wonder, it's like, is he just kidding with us again, where he's just like, I don't want that shit in this movie. But at this point, I mean, he's tied down.
Every right. He's after what the internet said about him.
Yeah, that's true. I agree with you there, and he proved him wrong. But which was awesome. You know, fuck you, Craig is not Bond. Which I don't even know if they exist anymore. They might. I don't know. But you know, I still don't think, you know. Just one more thing. I know we're getting off topic. Although actually, when I say that, all of our news items are pretty much done with. Michael Wilson was saying at the at the end of last year when they were pimping Quantum of Solace, all the press kits and shit. He was saying that the next one we're gonna really start work on it in January. We'll hire the writers and then we'll probably have a 2011 release. I don't believe that for a second. I think we're gonna be seeing another November, December 2010 release on the third Bond film. What do you think?
I don't know. I just hope. I've said this before, but since this is the first episode of a new show, again, folks. The reason why Quantum of Solace was not as good as Casino Royale, in my opinion, was because they just did not have the time. In all of these films, and this affected the Brosnan movies as well, is that they were affected by a release date that was imposed on them, and they had to get friggin' moving on it. I mean, I don't have time to tell you right now about the insanity that they went through on Tomorrow Never Dies. They started filming in April of that year. And they had a December release date. They had script problems, they had director problems. I don't want to get into it, but it was madness. Michael G. Wilson pleaded with the studio, please, we don't have the time. And the studio said, please, we need this. And that is the problem. You know, they've got a franchise which is needed, and they feel the need to hit these release dates, but it's much more important down the line to just get the film right, to get it right, to get the script absolutely concrete in place there and then. They had an on-set writer on Quantum of Solace because they felt, Mark Foster felt, that the script was good. It wasn't completely 100% where it needed to be.
But they had the writer's strike.
They didn't have the time, and they had the writer's strike. You're absolutely right. So it was a casualty of the writer's strike. But because of all these time pressures, the film was never... If you are writing on set, the film is never going to be 100% of what it could be, my opinion.
Yeah, but most movies, I mean, pretty much all movies have writers on set. There's all... It's commonplace, buddy. So that's...
I don't know if The Dark Knight had it. I think they had their script in place.
Yeah, well, there's a script in place, but you do on-set rewrites. You do say, what if we do this instead and whatnot? You know, there's always...
Well, sure, but let's put it this way. What I mean to say is that... A lot of projects do not go into filming saying the script is not 100% where it needs to be. They say, this is a good script. Maybe we can change it and make it better on set, but it's basically, if we shoot this, we've got a good movie.
I don't know.
Didn't have that.
There's a lot of movies where they go in really with no script. I mean, they've got the bulk of the spine of the story, and then that's kind of it. I mean, Indy 4 is that way. I know, but it's just...
I'm just saying it would be nice if it was in place, set in stone, great script. Casino Royale, there's a great description. They had their script.
And that was also a fast shoot. I mean, I listened to the commentary, and Mark Campbell was saying, like, he said, like, they had, like, what, 6 weeks to get the movie cut after they wrapped?
Blimey. You know,
I think he said that, and I don't remember. It was a good commentary. You should check it out. To the folks, Phil and I already have that DVD.
Yes.
Yeah. So
Blu-ray.
I don't have a Blu-ray.
So basically, all I'm saying is that I think I like the idea that if they get in a bunch of new writers, I'm glad that the Paris and Wade, the like pet writers that they had, I'm glad they're gone.
We don't know if they're gone.
We need but let's assume they're gone. We need fresh writers. We need fresh perspectives. I'd love for some writer to come in and pitch a story idea to them and for them to love it and just go, you know, in a fresh direction from somebody's viewpoint. Yeah. I'd love that. I just want them to take the time to get it right, and I hope it's a 2011 release date. In case you didn't tell, folks, I'm rather passionate about James Bond. I feel rather passionate that it should keep, you know, because I'm terrified that it really is, when you think about it, it's a fragile franchise. Yeah. Every single movie, if it doesn't work, if it doesn't click, and if it doesn't make money, you know, either it dies for a couple of years or they completely change direction. And I just hope we get at least five quality movies from Craig. Like I said, his second wasn't all it could have been.
It was good, though.
But it was far from a car wreck. Some people hated it. I can understand why they didn't like it. It's fair enough. Let's hope the third one everybody likes. But they're only going to like it if they take the time to get it right.
Craig, I think we can all agree that opinion. I think we can all agree that Craig was the best thing that happened to that franchise in many years. And I you know, so long that I don't even know the last time I've been this confident in the franchise. But the fact that Michael Wilson is a writer himself, and you know, they did, you know, pretty much know the story for Quantum of Solace as they wrapped Casino Royale, they knew overall what the story was going to be. That's a good sign. I mean, right now, the sky's the limit in terms of plot. I mean, you could have Bond still going after Quantum, which I think he will. I don't think they're just going to outright just obliterate the Quantum story arc and just end it. No, I think they're going to keep going with it.
They're probably – actually, this is a little interesting note for you, Jamie. I played the video game, the Quantum of Solace video game. It's not a great game, to be honest.
Look good.
It did have a sort of interesting ending. In the ending, it shows just as a cliffhanger. Instead of Bond going after, instead of Bond going after Vesper's lover, he ends up going after the insider in the Prime Minister's cabinet. So maybe he's going to be involved in some way. I don't know.
Of course, that was the original ending. Was him, you know,
thinking of
Mr. White again. There's been a little bit of a debate over it ended with a flat-out cliffhanger or it ended with Bond offing Mr. White. I'm under the impression that the gun barrel shot was originally supposed to be Craig killing Mr. White at the end of Quantum. I think. I could be wrong on that. But anyway, I digress.
I think Bond 3, Bond 23, call it what you will, it will end big shootout, Houses of Parliament, maybe a Big Ben climax. I think that's what we're going to see. That would be nice.
Well, they said they're going to go to New York, so they'll have to go to New York.
I've been saying that.
Well, see, that's the thing, though. If they do, then they will get an American director, and I don't know if the franchise has ever had an American behind the helm. I think they haven't, have they?
I can't think right now.
So. I know that there was rumors that Brett Ratner – I think I heard old rumors that Ratner lobbied heavily back in the late 90s to direct one. And this was during the Brosnan era. So I could have actually seen Ratner do a Brosnan Bond film. And I think he could have done fun. I don't hate Ratner. I'm sorry. I mean, like, am I a fan?
You know, a lot of people do. That is not going to go down well. Besides, Ratner's doing a new project every 10 seconds as I read it on the
including
screen.
Beverly Hills Cop 4, which I don't even know where the hell that stands. I mean, that's
I'm not talking about that right now.
That's another one where it's like they say. They said like flat out May 2010, and yet like I don't even know if they've. You know, we've talked about this before, just between Phil and me. It's just like, you know, that Eddie Murphy didn't like the script or something, and I don't even know where that stands. That's just – I don't care, and I don't think anybody else does either. I mean, Eddie Murphy already has Shrek.
I would love to talk about Beverly Hills Cop 4 in another show when it surfaces its ugly head again.
We can hear some real moaning – Phil moaning about it, which, you know, not that I blame him because, you know, Beverly Hills Cop 3 is pretty terrible, you know. But
God, why'd you say it?
It is. I wanted to end on a good note, but I guess we're not going to be able to for our first show here.
Look, folks, I mean, look, like the show that we used to do, it was me doing the hosting, and Jamie was my co-host, and I started the show, and I called Jamie called in, and then we did the show together, and I introduced the topics. This is the first time that someone else has been for me leading the show, and I've been chiming in. It's been so much fun, Jamie, doing this.
It has been, actually. I mean, again, as I said at the beginning of the show, about an hour or so back as we began, you know, we had problems and, you know, we literally lost shows. You know, we would spend like an hour or two talking, you know, and it's not uncommon. At the time, Phil and I thought, like, God, I mean, 2 hour podcast, that's a little much, but, the great folks over at Slash Film do that average. I mean, they do one every week and it's like 2 hours. You know, it's long, but it's in a good way. Cause, you know, when you're typing away, doing whatever shit you do on the computer, it's nice to listen, to have some music in the background. But instead of having music, how about you have two dorks like us talk about movies and bitching and moaning about them, of course. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is tight for us. I mean, the final running length of this
one, yes,
about an hour, but that's
hopefully
not
it will get tighter, though. I mean, yeah. I will say this is one of the weaknesses that Jamie and I have, in my opinion, is that sometimes we do go off on tangents that perhaps we shouldn't.
But we all, who doesn't? You know, who doesn't?
Yeah, I guess.
You know,
that's
what I think is identifiable. It's just the fact that, like, I bitch about stuff, too, that has nothing to do with the main topic. You know, like, all of a sudden, Phil and I are talking about, like, Batman. All of a sudden, I'm like, man, that pie I had last night was fucking fantastic. Now, back
yeah,
to,
I know.
You know, something like that. I mean, not that. That hasn't happened, but I'm sure it will. I'm not much of a pie person, personally.
I'll just say one last thing. It's that to any folks listening out there, when Peter puts this up for you to listen to, please do give us feedback. Please tell us if we're doing it well, doing it wrong, whether you hate us going off on tangents, whether we should never do one of these again. You please let us know.
Don't worry, we'll still feedback. Yeah, even if you don't want us to, we'll still do another one. Don't you worry.
Probably.
Don't you worry, ladies and germs. So I guess on that note, thus ends the first movie moan on ThinkMcFlyThink.com. It was fun. It went by very – I can't believe it's been an hour, a little over an hour now. Phil, it was very fun having you, buddy.
It was a pleasure to be here.
It was. Thanks for being here, man. We'll see you guys next week. Maybe same time. We'll try to post these as quick as we can. You know, some weeks we have day jobs, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, we do run the website, but, you know, we can't just do this 24/7, although we'd like to. But we live in a little place called reality, and that doesn't cause us to do that. So, you know, hopefully most likely we'll see you guys next week. Until then, you guys have a great week, and we will see you at the movies. Bye, folks.
Take care, guys. Bye.